Welcome to Taiwan Brief, a deeper dive in issues impacting Taiwan. Coming at you from Taichung, Taiwan, I'm Donovan Smith. All right, before we get started, I've got some news. In the last couple of weeks, I've been clearing the decks for some personal and professional changes, all of which is good news for Taiwan Report, though it meant not much came out for those weeks. I am now a contributing columnist for the Taiwan News with the expectation I will be writing 12 columns per month on whatever I want. Though curiously, they then asked me to visit Meet Taipei to write some articles on the startup scene. Now with this Nicaragua piece, I've begun my normal whatever I want series of articles. From these articles, I will be doing shows with the articles geared toward the general audience and this podcast expanding on them for you guys, which is by far a more advanced audience, to put it mildly. This means a regular 2 to 4 shows a week, by the way. It also means taking less of the type of gig work like translation that interfered with shows because I had to pay the bills. Though I'll still take some of those cases because even with the regular income from the articles, I'm still nowhere near having a salary that is much beyond basics. So here we go with the first of this somewhat new format for shows. I hope you enjoy it. The published article that forms the base of this is Taiwan's Alliance of Shared Values in Nicaragua, if you want to check that out on Taiwan News. We'll be linking to that on the site, though we're still figuring out in what format. The beginning here is from the article. In President Tsai's first inaugural speech in 2016, she stated, quote, "Taiwan has been a model citizen in global civil society. Since our democratization, we have persisted in upholding the universal values of peace, freedom, democracy, and human rights. It is with this spirit that we joined the Alliance of Shared Values and Concerns for Global Issues. We will continue to deepen our relationships with friendly democracies, including the United States, Japan, and Europe, to advance multifaceted cooperation on the basis of shared values." This seemed mildly optimistic and drew little notice at the time, as most of the world was still holding Taiwan at an arm's length for fear of angering China. Today, it sounds prescient. As a former diplomat, the president clearly carefully thought through how she wanted Taiwan to be presented on the world stage. She surrounded herself with spokespersons and diplomats, especially Foreign Minister Zhao Xiexie Joseph Wu, who understood, agreed with, and could clearly articulate this image of Taiwan. It was well received in diplomatic circles, but early on only produced few concrete results. So let me jump in here. Several key things not touched on here you guys will appreciate. First, something that undoubtedly was very much on the president's mind during her first inauguration was the humiliation she suffered at the hands of Washington when she was running for president in 2012. The U.S. in those days was more pro-KMT because of the perceived stability they brought to cross-strait affairs, which meant that Taiwan-China spats were much more unlikely to happen and dragged the U.S. away from their then primary focus on boosting relations and economic ties with Beijing. The U.S. State Department back then used diplomats to signal U.S. displeasure with the idea of the DPP or the largely unknown Tsai Ing-wen winning the election. It was one of the contributing factors in her losing that election which saw Ma Ying-jeou elected to a second term. Following her loss, then comeback to become the presidential candidate once again in 2016, she must have thought long and hard about how she would appeal to Washington and the international community. When the time came to visit Washington again, she was far better prepared. I'm told got far better advisors and supporters in the United States, and that time around the U.S. raised no indirect objections to her winning the election. And of course, she won. I went back to her first inaugural in this piece very intentionally because it clearly lays out her vision for how she planned to go forward, and much of it remains the same today, which is testament to her planning and discipline. It has evolved in key ways, though, such as her famous pronouncement on BBC that Taiwan doesn't need to declare independence. The Republic of China, Taiwan, is already an independent sovereign nation, or words roughly to that effect. It was in her second inaugural she added the Republic of China, Taiwan formula and dated that to the moving of the capital to Taipei. But we've been over that topic before. But it's an interesting sidebar on how her thinking has been evolving. In the main, however, the thrust she laid out for her role, or for the role she wanted Taiwan to play on the world stage, has been remarkably consistent right from the beginning of her first term. Okay, so back to the article. How much the president could see how things would play out is unclear, but the, quote, United States, Japan, and Europe, she referenced in her inauguration speech, and others such as Australia have in just the last couple of years dramatically shifted their diplomatic stances towards what sounds very much like Tsai's inaugural speech, culminating in U.S. President Joe Biden's Summit for Democracy held last week, to which Taiwan was invited, though not all went well. By the way, that not all went well, there's a link to the whole map censorship during Audrey Tong's speech thing. Internationally, growing anti-democratic movements, backsliding of more democracies into authoritarianism, the growing aggressiveness of Russia and the deepening of the Russia-Chinese relationship have raised alarms, but none have raised so many in recent years as the rise of authoritarian China. It was a long time coming, considering the list of bad behavior perpetrated by Beijing. The crushing of the democracy movement in Hong Kong, the increasingly obvious genocide and forced labor facing Uyghurs and other minorities, domestic repression and the rise of the surveillance state, heightened belligerence along its borders, including shedding of blood on the Indian-Chinese line of actual control, revelations of Chinese systematic undermining of democratic institutions worldwide, money diplomacy disrupting and destabilizing governments, which, by the way, you guys know is a reference to the BRI, widespread industrial espionage, a staggeringly rapid military expansion, and openly hostile wolf warrior diplomacy. Taiwan's diplomatic stance was perfectly placed to accommodate this widespread shift in perceptions and to highlight the nation's front line of democracy status at the blunt end of an unwanted gray zone conflict launched by Beijing. President Tsai stated this explicitly on Twitter on October 13th. Hashtag Taiwan stands on democracy's first line of defense in the face of increasing threats from authoritarian actors. We will not give in and will continue working with our democratic partners across the world to enhance our collective resistance. In just the last few weeks, she has played host to multiple delegations of lawmakers from the US, EU, and various European states, and the nation secured an invitation to the inaugural Summit for Democracy. Any of these diplomatic accomplishments would have been unimaginable only a few years ago. President Tsai's diplomatic background provides her with a focus and discipline in her messaging, and has taken the lead in being a champion of the fight for democracy and human rights. In the same Twitter message noted above, she included a video where she states that Taiwan will share its experience countering China's tactics and keep coordinating with like-minded countries to safeguard the liberal democratic world order. She added that Taiwan will join with others in tackling the unprecedented challenges from authoritarian regimes. Unfortunately, at times the president has been boxed in by another consideration, holding on to Taiwan's dwindling diplomatic partners that keep Taiwan's foot in the door on many international settings, and that, in the eyes of some, provide some legitimacy in as an internationally recognized independent nation state. Okay, interjection for you guys. You guys probably caught the "in the eyes of some." Yes, that was deliberate, but a topic for another day. Moving on. This has been at times at odds with safeguarding liberal democracy and challenging authoritarian regimes. An uncomfortable case in point was Nicaragua. Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega has orchestrated a backslide from democracy to authoritarianism in recent years, In 2018, protests erupted, which left dozens dead, hundreds injured, and media outlets arbitrarily shut down. In November, Ortega was re-elected president in an election many countries labeled a sham, after he jailed seven of his leading opponents. After criticism from the EU, whose parliament recently sent a friendly delegation to Taiwan, Ortega attacked them, saying, quote, "The European Union has a parliament whose majority are fascists, Nazis." As for the pro-Taiwan Americans criticizing him over jailing opponents, he commented, quote, "Those who are in prison are the sons of the female dog of Yankee imperialism." Okay, guys, I had to use those quotes. They were simply so outrageously over the top, and I found them kind of humorous. But they really underscore the point that Ortega isn't even remotely part of the, quote, alliance of shared values that President Tsai has been calling for. All right, back to the article. Nicaragua cut diplomatic ties with Taiwan on December 9th. That the ostensibly leftist and authoritarian Ortega, already under heavy pressure from the United States, abandoned Taiwan for ostensibly leftist and authoritarian China shouldn't have come as a surprise, even though it came only weeks after a new Nicaraguan ambassador had been approved. Indeed, during an earlier stint as president in 1985, he also switched ties to Beijing, only for ties to be restored under another more right-wing president in 1990. With diminishing returns from their deteriorating relationship with the U.S., it made sense to turn to Beijing for increased investment. So, naturally, authoritarians stick together. All right, back to the article. For the Tsai administration, this is a mixed bag. Taiwan has lost eight diplomatic partners during her term and a half in office, a fact which both the KMT and the Chinese Communist Party are keen to exploit. This loss increased pressure on Foreign Minister Wu to resign, a call the president rejected. However, it releases the administration from the contradictory position of being a supporter of human rights and democracy, and simultaneously a friend to the Ortega regime. This internal conflict is neatly encapsulated in a tweet from the foreign ministry. Quote, "It's with great regret we end diplomatic ties with Nicaragua. Longstanding friendship and successful cooperation benefiting the people of both countries were disregarded by the Ortega government. Taiwan remains unbowed and will continue as a force for good in the world." Okay, I didn't spell it out in the article, but that contrast between the great regret, long-lasting friendship, and force for good makes that tweet a real gem in diplo speak, but I digress. Defending diplomatic relations with this autocratic regime was costly, not only in terms of undermining the basic diplomatic image Taiwan is projecting as a force for good, but also financially. Following the 2018 protests and during the international backlash, Taiwan loaned the Nicaraguan government $100 million. Taiwan, defender of democracy, is no longer tied to a human rights catastrophe, though it remains tied to, for example, Eswatini. All right, jumping in again. Frankly, that U.S. $100 million loan was pretty appalling. Coming right after the Ortega regime gunned down its own citizens in the streets and shut down opposition. Because it was a side note to this article, I didn't go much into Eswatini, which is Africa's last monarchy and has seen their own protests and remains a problem for Taiwan's image. But it still doesn't yet hold a candle to Nicaragua in being a high-profile abuser of human rights. In practical terms, the impact is also limited. Trade between the two nations is relatively small. The public has long since grown used to losing diplomatic partners and evokes relatively little discussion or electoral impact. And more of the public blame the PRC side than the Tsai administration. Concerns remain about Nicaraguans in Taiwan, especially students, who in past have been collateral damage in lost scholarships, but at least one institution is stepping up to support their students, though others remain nervous about their fate. This is something that is deeply disturbing. When countries cut diplomatic ties with Taiwan students, they often lose their scholarships in the middle of the school year, leaving them totally screwed. That's a poor look for Taiwan. They should at least see those students from those countries through the end of their school year so they have the time and breathing room to figure out their next steps. Now, by the way, the one institution that said they'll stand by their Nicaraguan students through the end of the school year is National Chenggong University. So, kudos on them. In spite of the downsides of the loss of a diplomatic partner, this will make it easier for Taiwan to rightfully claim to be part of an alliance of shared values, which may be more beneficial in the long run. While I left that ending up to the reader to decide by using the word may, frankly, I think it will be more beneficial in the long run. Spending huge amounts of money on an authoritarian government for nominal diplomatic recognition in this case simply was undermining Taiwan's credibility. The money would be far better spent on building relationships with nations that are sympathetic and have shown courage in supporting Taiwan. Lithuania being the prime example of that, and most recently. The money and energy that went into Nicaragua is simply better spent elsewhere. All right, that's it for today's show. Be sure to hit like, subscribe, and all that good stuff. By the way, if you're one of our patrons on Patreon, by the way, /Taiwan Report, you can ask questions and I'll answer some of them on the show. All right, and if you're not a patron already, please join us as one. It really does help us here at Taiwan Report. And it's not just me. It's Sean working behind the scenes and Mike contributing some stuff, and some others are contributing periodically as well. So be sure to support us at patreon.com/Taiwan Report. There's another show coming up soon, and you're going to be seeing a whole lot more coming out.
This has been brought to you by the Taiwan Report. For more content like this, become our patron at report.tw.
哎呦，就是那个台湾狗啦，最喜欢我的台湾狗了。